राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जना बल्लभा गिरी वरदारी। यशोधनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना चिरावन चारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिव्राज श्रेष्ठ सुरुषित श्री श्रीमान स्वाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्तिवीनांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। राजगण श्रीमान भावतम की जय। स्वामी भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रमंदी अवगर सिद्ध सुमन बोधी सौगर श्री गुरु गौरंग। ओम अज्ञान चमिनांदश गिनांजना शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं नृपकदामयं ददाति सपदान्तिकम्। वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यरेव च पतितानां भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासुदेव गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Canto 5, Chapter 17, Text 20. Asadrishoya pradibhati mayaya kshibheva madhvasava tamra lochana. Nana gavadvo khana ishrehriya. यत् पादयो स्पर्शन दर्शितेन्द्रियाः। Okay. Asadrusha. For a person with polluted vision. Yaha. Who? Pratibhati. Appears. Mayaya. The influence of Maya. Kshibha. One who is inebriated or angry. Iva. Like. Madhu. By honey. Asava. And liquor. Tamralochana. Having eyes reddish like copper. Na. Not. Nagavadva. The wives of the serpent demon. Arhane. And worshipping. Ishare. Were unable to proceed. Riya, because of bashfulness. Yatpadayo, of whose lotus feet. Sparshana, by the touching. Darshita, agitated. Indriya, whose senses. Translation for Prabhashila Prabhupada Gija. Translation for persons with impure vision. The Supreme Lord's eyes appear like those of someone who indiscriminately drinks intoxicating beverages. Thus bewildered, such unintelligent persons become angry at the Supreme Lord. And due to their angry mood, the Lord himself appears angry and very fearful. However, this is an illusion. When the wives of the serpent demon were agitated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet, due to shyness, they could proceed no further in their worship of him. Yet the Lord remained unagitated by their touch, for he is equipoised in all circumstances. Therefore, who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purport, anyone who remains unagitated even in the presence of cause for agitation is called dhira or equipoise. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being always in a transcendental position, is never agitated by anything. Therefore, someone who wants to become dhira must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 13, Krishna says, dhiras tatra namuhyati. A person who is equipoised in all circumstances is never bewildered. Prahlad Maharaj is a perfect example of a dhira. When the fierce form of Narasimhadev appeared in order to kill Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad was unagitated. He remained calm and quiet, whereas others, including even Lord Brahma, were frightened by the features of the Lord. That's in the purport. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. It says here, asadrisha, for a person with polluted vision. Then when the Supreme Lord appears before him performing multifarious pastimes, and they think that Krishna is bewildered like a mundane person. This is like the previous verse, avajananti mamudha manusham tanamashritam. When Krishna performs pastime, his manusha lila, in this human-like original form, then many people mistake Krishna to be ordinary. And to be ordinary means to be agitated like ordinary individuals. So when Krishna performs pastimes like killing demons, they think he is angry. If Krishna performs pastimes like amorous pastimes with the gopis, with the queens of Dwarka, he looks like a lusty fellow or a henpecked husband in Dwarka Leela. And that way they think Krishna is ordinary like them. Because they're lusty fellows, and they're henpecked husbands, and they get angry, and so on. And so, because of their own vision, they project that onto the Supreme Lord, especially in his human-like pastimes. This is due to Maya. This is due to the influence of the material energy. This is a Atmavan Manyate Jagat, where one has a perception of the reality according to his own situation. So he's projecting. This is interesting. This is true for self-realized personalities and also for ordinary jivas. When we are in a certain condition of life, we project onto the reality around us. And so we see other living entities in the same way that we see ourselves, usually. We reflect our own. Therefore, it's said that if you're finding fault with others, it means that you yourself must be having the same faults. Because we project our own condition onto the world, onto the environment around us. And so we're able to easily recognize so many things. That should make us wonder, why am I able to so easily recognize this? Interesting thing enough is that for very evolved souls, also the same reality, the same, I don't know, tendency is there. Atmavan Manyate Jagat. Like it's described that for the Mahabhagavata devotee, he, whatever types of love he is having for Krishna or Bhava, he sees that all living entities has the same type of love for the Supreme Lord also. So therefore it said he sees all like Vaishnavas. He sees that everyone is in the Lord. That means that everyone is taking shelter of the Lord and they're having a similar loving disposition as him. So they feel no inclination to preach. Those who are in such consciousness all the time, they may not feel any inclination to preach because they see all living entities have the same love for the Lord that I have. And we also have the same vision. All living entities have the same love for the Lord that I have. Because we ain't got no love. So we see that all living entities are similarly disposed towards the Lord. And therefore, there's always animosity amongst the living entities. You can say that's the reality because those who have no love for Krishna, then there's always animosity amongst them. That's the natural disposition. But although people perceive the Lord in this way and they develop Pakritam Mohinim Shritaha, this the next verse after the Avajananti Mamuda, Krishna says, Param Bhavam Ajananto, Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram. They do not understand my transcendental nature as the source of everything that is and as imperishable. So the result of their vision of the Supreme Lord, their mundane vision, is that their whole life is basically defeated. Moghasha, Mogakarma, Namogjnana, Vichetasaha, their hopes, their knowledge, their activities, their goal-oriented activities, all of it is defeated by their understanding and subsequent offensive mentality toward the Supreme Lord. Rakshasyam Asuram Chaiva, they become demons. Pakritam Mohinam Shritaha, they take shelter of the illusory energy. So the same being mentioned here, Maya, they become bewildered by Maya. Those who have a more enlightened vision of the Supreme Lord on account of hearing about Krishna from self-realized souls, then they understand that Krishna is never agitated by the modes of material nature. So although it appears that although he performs these colorful leelas where he looks like he's been influenced by the material nature, his movement is not influenced by Maya, but is rather influenced by another type of energy. That energy is called prema, or which is an energy coming from his own self, Swarup Shakti. So in the absolute, there is also movement. The Mayavadis, they say that God and movement don't go good together. It doesn't work because God is everywhere, so there's nowhere to move, right? If we're all pervading, there is nowhere to move as such. So they don't conceive of the Supreme Lord in terms of movement. And therefore, when they see the pastimes of Krishna, they think them to be mundane, transformations of the modes of nature, the mode of goodness, and so on. Because there can't be movement in the Supreme in the final issue. How can there be movement if you're all pervading? There's nowhere to move. You're already everywhere. So, but in the higher understanding of the absolute truth presented by the Bhagavata school is that the Supreme Lord, in the Supreme Lord, the Parabrahman, there is also movement, but the movement is not due to the influence of the material energy. Those of us who are in the material world, we understand that all movement is due to the influence of Maya. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 5, I don't know the Sanskrit. Krishna says that it's impossible for the living entity to not do something, even for a moment. He can not do something, even for a moment, due to being under the influence of the material nature. So he's always got to do something. And we have this experience. You know, when you're by yourself, you got to do something, right? If there's nothing to do, Then you start twiddling your fingers. I mean, something, some activity must be there. This is due to the influence of Maya. So we only know about movement in the material world, and therefore we conceive of the absolute truth, knowing him to be all-pervading and so on, we tend to think that there can't be any movement as such, because the only movement we know about is a movement inspired by the material energy. But in Krishna, there is also movement. He also gets afraid, just like this Damodara Leela. He also exhibits all the qualities that we see in the material world. There are pastimes where Krishna gets very arrogant. You know, right before he kills a demon, he always stands like this, you know. Who are you? You know, they're very puffed up. And he'll speak some very puffed up words also. You know, what is this demon? I'll easily demolish him, you know, like that, very arrogantly. He'll exhibit all these qualities which actually exist in the spiritual world. They even envy, all these types of qualities exist in the spiritual reality, but they exist in order to add flavor to the pastimes. They're originally from the spiritual world, in fact. The qualities here, they tend to destroy because of not having their shelter in the Supreme Lord. As in the spiritual world, the quality is simply Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, an expansive ocean of bliss, because Krishna is the target, and it's all meant to add to Krishna's happiness. So the gopis, they may show envy towards each other and the various parties, because that gives Krishna pleasure. In the material world, they also might become ecstatic. They find out some living entities are fighting over them. They think this is very nice, until they're like shot or something. Because the qualities in the material world have such destructive potence, power. You know, so the person thinks, oh, he selects, okay, I like you, I'll go for you. Then the other one shoots them. Well, if I can't have you, then no one can have you. You know, they have a very dangerous element in the material world. Whereas in the spiritual world, they simply help to expand the ocean of bliss. So there's movement in the Supreme, and it's movement inspired by its internal potency. That's called prema. It's a movement inspired by love. Where in the material world, there is no love at all. It's just movement inspired by the modes of nature. I always found it remarkable when I was watching movies that in the movies, they would always find the love of their life, you know? And out of how many billions of living entities on the earth, you know? And then they would travel to some random place, and in that random place, they would find the love of their life, you know? You know, by chance. And everyone seems to be able to find the love of their life. And I always found that, how is it possible you can find the love of your life like that? There's 6 billion living entities in human forms in the body or more, however many. But somehow you always manage to find the love of your life. And that's because there isn't any love. It's just mind and senses. The relationships in the material world are inspired by the mind and senses. Nothing like love as such. It's just a material energy acting, and we're deluded by that. So the Lord is exhibiting a variety of pastimes. And he's neutral, or dira. Dira means he's not disturbed by the things that are going on in terms of, in a mundane sense. There's disturbance in the transcendental sense, as I already described. But in the mundane sense, he's not actually angry or actually proud, or he's very neutral. Neutral in the sense that he's not moved by material energy, as we are. That's, in that sense, neutral. He cannot be moved by the material energy, even though within it, he is not under the jurisdiction of the material energy. The example is given like when a president or someone goes inside a prison. It is not that he becomes a prisoner now. He has free movement inside the prison. It's not that now he is a prisoner. So similarly, the Supreme Lord enters inside the prison world of the material energy, but he's not a prisoner. So he's not moved by the energy here. So he's not actually angry and so on. And those who understand this quality of the Supreme Lord and take shelter of him, then they gain that same quality. It means that they are also not moved by material energy. So sometimes it is seen that transcendentalists, they get angry too. You hear many pastimes of Prabhupada, you know, kind of like snapping, and it seems like, well, look. He's also angry. He's also getting angry. But the idea is that when someone takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, their movement is not inspired by the material energy. So although they exhibit these type of qualities which look quite mundane and might cause people to think that they're not spiritual, you know, because in the material world, spiritual means that you don't get angry, you know, nothing will disturb you. You're just like you know, Brahman. You know, nothing is going on, nothing disturb you. So when they see like a devotee, bhakta, getting disturbed, they take it to be part of the material energy. But he's actually there, he's actually sober, meaning that he's not moved by material energy. Although in a higher sense, he could be moved by transcendental impetus, and therefore he's getting angry sometimes and so on. On a lower level, it's just meaning that there's no disturbance at all when material energy is doing its thing. Which is like this is a basic platform for further spiritual progress. Dirasutra Namuyati. This is like the most fundamental platform that one needs to be establishing to make further progress. That he has to be quite neutral to the upheavals of the material world. And the reason for that is that if he's not, then his mind remains captured by duality in the material world. He said this, she said that, they did this, this is going on, that is going on. And while your mind is filled up with all that stuff, where is the time for thinking of Krishna? So, although this is like a basic platform of needed for further progress, it's not so easy to be on. You find many people get easily, all of us, we get easily disturbed by the slightest little setback, the slightest little, some envy comes in, I am doing what they're not doing, or they said this and they weren't supposed to say that. And that will be taking up most of the discussion. You know, Arjuna has some issues in Bhagavad Gita in the beginning. But he like summarized it in like 5 points, bullet points. You know, boom, 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 boom. You know, I'm feeling compassion. He gave a bullet point. When we have our problems, we write like a whole thesis, you know, and then we give it to the guru, you know, throw it on the table. It makes this like loud sound. This is my problem. And then the guru has to open it. It's like, man, this is thicker than the Bhagavatam. I know. Yeah, small print. I've done good work. I think it's probably about the size of the Mahabharata, you know. I'll come back in a week. You know, and you expect it. They should read, you know, go through it fast and find solutions. And so, but when Arjuna had an issue, it was just bullet points. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right, Krishna, I'm confused. Can you tell me what to do? And then Krishna begins teaching him. And the rest of the time was spent inquiring about spiritual knowledge and how to transcend. That's most of the Bhagavad Gita. Most of the Gita is Arjuna complaining. Chapter 1 through 17. Chapter 18, Krishna gets to speak a little. You know, and then Arjuna is ultimately still dissatisfied. No, it was a little presentation and a lot of spiritual understanding in order to transcend the disturbance. So like that, that's the basic platform of progress, that one has to come into spiritual level of being undisturbed. And how does one do that? By taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. So the example is given here of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is, when Narsingadeva appeared, everyone was freaking out because his form obviously inspires that, inspires kind of like a freaking out. Oftentimes we sing with great devotion, but I often joke that if we were singing the Narsingadeva prayers and Narsingadeva would suddenly just manifest before us, then probably many of us would start running. It might be a little scary. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that I might start running. Because we know what we are. We know what type of anartas are there. And if he's the killer of anartas, and we might have it. Well, if he kills anartas, he might kill me too, you know. If he were to suddenly appear, it might be kind of scary. It'd be hard to sing devotionally. At least, even if we didn't run, we'd be... A lot of tears would be coming, but not tears of ecstasy, tears of great fear, because his form inspires that. And it must be the case, because all the great devatas, they were freaking out. Even Lakshmi, she didn't even want to come close. They all offered prayers, and he was still... After all the devatas, they offered prayers with so many beautiful alankars, very poetic, nothing that we could even dream of doing. They offered beautiful prayers, and Narsingadeva was still, nothing was pacifying him. So then they were like, you know, Lakshmi, go and tell your husband, you know, chill out. And Lakshmi said, I'm not going there. I've never seen this form before. And then Lord Brahma, you're the leader of the demigods, you go for it. I already offered my prayer. You see, nothing happened. He's still, in a very fierce mood. So Prahlad Maharaj is on this side. Prahlad, you go. He immediately went. So the example Prabhupada gives is because he's taken shelter of the Lord. The example Prabhupada gives is just like a fish who has taken shelter of the water. A huge, gigantic elephant. When he goes in Ganga, the Ganga immediately, you know, sweeps him away. And then the tiny fish, he is also in the water, and he's freely playing around in the water, having a good time. Elephant is drowning and dying, and the tiny fish is having a very nice time. Why is that? Prabhupada's answer is because the fish is taking shelter of the water. So therefore, he's able to move around freely without fear, whereas the elephant is not. The other example Prabhupada gives in the same section, Prahlad Maharaj's section, is when a cat holds a mouse in its mouth versus her cub in the mouth. Their experience is quite different. As you can, when the mouse's experience is fatal, whereas the cub's experience is nurturing. So, and why is that? Because he's taking shelter of the mother like that. That's kind of the idea here. So one who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, he becomes unagitated. I think a very good example of this is Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj is a very good example because when he was an embryo in the womb, and Ashwatthama sent the nuclear weapon, Brahmastra, to kill him in the womb. So Krishna appeared inside the womb and saved Parikshit Maharaj from death. And naturally you appreciate that. He saw Vishnu inside the embryo and he very much appreciated as you can imagine, it's nice because his life was saved. Later on, when Parikshit Maharaj was cursed to die in 7 days, the question may come up, why didn't the Supreme Lord do anything there? In my youth, he's protecting me. Why he didn't stop this one? Like that. He was not agitated at all because he took shelter of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada said he understood that this must be what Krishna wants. Because in my youth, he protected me from the Brahmastra, so he could have also protected me from the curse of a Brahmin boy. But that type of protection did not come. Therefore, it must be the Supreme Lord's will that this happens. Therefore, he didn't protest, he didn't get agitated, rather he felt grateful. He said, the Supreme Lord has kindly come before me in the curse of a Brahmin boy. So that due to fear of dying, I will forcibly detach myself from materialistic householder life and take shelter of him. And that's the first way the Supreme Lord came to him. And the second way the Supreme Lord came to him was the messenger who delivered the curse. Because he got cursed, but if no one told him, then he would have been moving along with his life, as it were, and then on the seventh day he would have died. But Krishna came to him again as a messenger to deliver the fact that he got cursed. And that way, Parikshit Maharaj says, the Supreme Lord kindly brought me to the bank of the Ganges to hear from Shukadeva Goswami. So he in his vision of the environment, Krishna came in two forms, as the curse of the Brahmin boy and as the messenger to kindly bring him to the bank of the Ganges, because by the message of the messenger who was sent by Shamika Rishi, he would be inspired to go to Ganga and hear the message of Bhagavatam. So in this way, this is maybe a little bit more practical example of something we might go through. On the one hand, we offer some prayers and we see some reciprocation and we feel the Supreme Lord is there. And on the other hand, we experience some severe reversal in life and we may think, if we're not dear, if we've not actually taken shelter of the Lord, then we get disturbed. How could the Lord allow this to happen to me? I've been chanting 16 rounds for a whole 2 years, you know, and with great sincerity and devotion, so much service I'm rendering, why is this happening to me? Like that, if we've not actually taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, we become disturbed. But Parikshit Maharaj was showing a very nice example of taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Oh, it must be the Supreme Lord. Will is like this. And so it wasn't that he was inactive. He was still proactive. He went to the bank of the Ganges to fast until death. And by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, he had to hear the message of the Bhagavatam. And in that way, he was liberated. Those are the points I see. So I gave kind of like two ways of explaining Dura. The way in which I understood in the purport, the second explanation, he's not disturbed by it. But the other is that he may appear disturbed also, but that disturbance is due to another influence. It is not due to the influence of the material energy. So in that sense, he is also Dura, even if he looks disturbed, because he's inspired by a transcendental energy. Although in a sense that is more for perhaps applicable to us, and one is not disturbed by the upheavals that he will certainly see in the environment. He remains neutral to that and sees the Supreme Lord as blessing him for further progress. They call this the negative approach to the absolute truth. This is a term that has been given as the negative approach. Generally, our tendency is to be overly optimistic in terms of our sense of intelligence, our sense of understanding, our movement. Everything is taken in a positive sense. But the negative approach to absolute truth is one feels himself very unworthy, very helpless, very hopeless, which are considered negative attitudes. But those attitudes are ultimately draws us towards the absolute positive Krishna. It's just like a magnet, you know, apparently with magnets, opposite subtract, is it the, I guess this is true, I don't know anything about science much, but the positive, what is it, charge or something, what is the language you, and then it attracts the negative, whatever, what do you call it, charge, polarity, I don't know, some word. So in the same way, by cultivation of the negative mentality, this is the term that's used, I'm helpless, I'm hopeless, that actually opens you up to being supremely attracted to the Supreme Lord. Whereas when one is overly confident or has an overestimation of his power, his ability, his intellect, and so on, then that doesn't, you can't be attracted by the absolute positive. That's expressed by Queen Kunti and her prayer of being materially exhausted. You know, only those who are materially exhausted can actually be attracted to the absolute. Where those who are edamanda madapaman, they're proud of being shruti learned and beautiful and wealthy. They cannot be so attracted to the Supreme Lord, even though they might put on a good show. She says they cannot do so feelingly. So the negative approach to the absolute truth is ultimately positive, because it draws us towards the Supreme Lord. I'm helpless, I'm hopeless. When a living entity feels that sincerely, it is always the reality that we're helpless and hopeless, but generally we're an illusion, so we don't see it. So when a living entity sees that, that allows him to be receptive to the absolute truth, the grace of the absolute truth, coming in its various manifestations. But when he has an overestimation of his power and so on, then he's not so attractive. So such is the approach towards the absolute. He sees the environment as always Krishna favoring him, seeing that I'm always an illusion, I'm helpless, and therefore Krishna is coming in these variety of ways just to draw me toward him, just to draw my attention toward him, which is oblivious to him due to the influence of Maya. Like this, these are some ideas. Anyone has any questions? Yeah.
So, when you were explaining how Krishna is independent of the modes of nature, he has his own existence, I was thinking about how it says that the only way to become Krishna conscious is the desire to be Krishna conscious. So then, in light of the statement that you made later on in your class about how the Dhira, he may be agitated by the transcendental energy, so he's still Dhira, but it appears that he's agitated by the modes of nature, but actually the influence is transcendental. So my question is the desire, so then factually, you know, whatever we're doing under the modes of nature, that's not really what's attracting Krishna, it's the desire in our heart. So my question is, since he's independent of the modes of nature, is that desire in our heart then influenced by some transcendental energy?
Yes.
Okay. And then how is it that we're under the modes of nature, but we're having desires influenced by the transcendental energy?
That's due to the influence of the investment, we can say. The investment of the internal energy that comes in its seed form is faith. Faith, Srimati Radharani is called the Shraddha Devi. She's the embodiment of Shraddha to the highest degree. No one has greater faith than in Krishna than Srimati Radharani. Therefore, she has nonstop movement towards Krishna. Nothing can impel her or impede her movement towards Krishna, on account of her profound faith, which is greater than anyone else's in all of existence, spiritual or mundane. So she's called the Shraddha Devi, the embodiment of Shraddha. So only by the light of the Shraddha does Krishna come to light. The example is given, this is a nice example, is if you see, if there's a dark cloud on a dark moon night, then you can't see the dark cloud, isn't it? The dark cloud on a dark moon night. The idea is the dark cloud looks like the sky because you don't see any light. So you can't tell that there's a cloud there. But when there's a flash of lightning, then immediately with that light, you can see there's a cloud and there's the sky. You see the difference between the two. So Krishna's compared to like a dark cloud and a dark moon night. In other words, he's unknowable. You can't see him. You can't attain him, adokshaja. But when there's a flash of light, then immediately your connection with the dark cloud can be established. So that flash of light is Srimati Radharani, whose investment in us comes in the form of faith, the seed form of faith. So real faith is actually transcendental. Faith in God is transcendental. And it comes through the agents of the Absolute Truth, who are her servants or the servants of the Absolute Truth, the servants of Krishna. They're called as pure devotees who are moving around in this world. So due to the investment of the internal energy coming through them in the form of faith, then we are gaining some connection with Krishna like that. So the desire can be genuine. It is genuine when one has such a connection with the Absolute Truth through his agents in this world. And then the process of sadhana bhakti is just the unfolding of the seed, watering of the seed and the unfolding of the flower of Shraddha to its highest point, like that. Understand?
So then is the understanding that anyone who gives us the faith to pursue Krishna, then we should know that such a person is also, like, he's also received it from the internal energy?
Yes, which is really to say he's received it from his guru. The idea is that the internal energy is flowing through the agents in this world. That is how we're having some connection to it. So we're using different language here, but it's to say the same thing. Are there any other questions, comments? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. You explained that unless one feels completely hopeless, fallen, and you know, basically he can actually
negative
be negative approach, he can be able to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. But what if a person is having a difficult time doing that?
Has a difficult time doing that?
Yeah, I would say, like, wouldn't the person just basically take shelter of his devotees, Krishna's devotees, basically?
He has a difficult time doing what?
Like, just trying to... Like, maybe some people, I don't know, maybe, for example, some devotees might want to take shelter by Krishna by just praying to him. But approaching Krishna directly, sometimes they have a difficult time, so...
Oh, like that. Yeah, so no, yeah, when I say Krishna, that's inclusive of all his agents, including scripture, including devotees, you know, including the holy name of Krishna, especially in the age of Kali. So when I say Krishna, I mean all the various manifestations of Krishna in this world.
Okay.
Definitely including devotees.
No, I understand that, but what if a particular devotee has a problem? He believes or she believes that sometimes instead of taking shelter of devotees, they rather sometimes take shelter of the materialist association because it might be more soothing to how they're feeling.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. This is because when our shraddha is not very strong yet, then there may be some experience that is unpalatable. And what we'll find is that the tendency is to take shelter of our old habits, whatever old habits we were doing before. Just like sometimes devotees may be around for long periods of time, and then when they leave, then whatever they were doing right before they joined Krishna consciousness, they do start doing that again, you know. So the tendency is that when our faith is somehow derailed or impeded or bewildered like that, then we do take shelter of our materialist or some old habits or whatever. We have our shelter-taking propensity is there. And because our faith is not matured in taking shelter of Krishna or his agents, so then the tendency to take shelter of illusion and its various colorful manifestations, apparently variegated manifestations, is natural. Because the soul has got to take shelter of something. So, and they'll take shelter according to their faith, the movement of their faith. So the only thing that can be done in such a situation is that if anything can be done at all, then a well-wisher has to try to keep their connection with the transcendental and try to nourish their faith. Because they do have some faith, there's other ways of learning also, and that's the disappointment of the material energy. The material energy is always taking shelter of Maya is always disappointing because now you see it, now you don't. It's not... the Bhagavatam says they call them fallible soldiers. Fallible soldiers. Fallible soldiers means right when you need the most, they'll fail you. They either disappear from your life or they find other things more important than you and so on. So the material energy is always failing the living entity, birth after birth. So that's one way of learning. It's called the school of hard knocks. And you know, and just getting kind of busted by the material energy. That's one way of learning, and it can be effective. You know, Maya, she's been doing it for forever. So that's one method. And another method is if they're not able to reach out, then some well-wishers will try to keep their connection to the transcendental to whatever degree. And that way when Maya starts busting them up, then that whatever little connection they have to the transcendence by dint of some well-wisher will become all the more attractive at the time of greatest need. In other words, on account of being illusioned or whatever in the present moment, so then taking shelter here and there, that goes on, that happens all the time. It's not, and once it's not really that big of a deal because devotion is inexhaustible. So no matter how much Maya is getting in, whatever little bhakti is there, it will remain there. It's imperishable. That's what Krishna describes as bhakti. Whatever is there is imperishable. But its movement may be impeded for some time. So in the meantime, if some well-wisher can keep some link to the transcendence for the individual, then when the material energy starts doing its disappearing act, all right, all the things that we found near and dear, they all start disappearing from us. All our well-wishers, all our friends, all our money, all our opulences. Maya starts doing a disappearing act, causing great pain to us, then that little connection that we had to the transcendence by a well-wisher becomes very attractive, as it always was. But we have no distractions now to keep us like that. So that happens sometimes. Yeah, one cannot see, like I've been mentioning in the recent discussions, our movement in this world is due to our faith. And we don't have control over people's faith. It's a free thing. It's a thing that moves freely, according to their own will. So we can, you know, in other words, we can't just go up to people and say, well, you know, the Bhagavatam says this, or the Shastra says this, or the Guru says this, and you can say that, but it won't matter if their faith isn't there. If their faith is somewhere else, then their movement will be in that particular direction. So we can only hope to inspire faith, but you can't control it. So, like sometimes in a modern context, faith, people try to control faith by saying, well, it says here in the books this. Well, according to the law, this. According to the Acharyas, this. According to Srila Prabhupada, that. And in that way, they hope to control the movement of people's faith in a particular direction. But you can't ultimately do that. It ultimately doesn't work. Faith can only be inspired. You know, and then personalities who are very powerful and in spirituality are very potent, then what they do is they inspire people's faith. They're able to, like, draw it out because everyone's got an inclination toward the Supreme is there in all living entities. And powerful spirituals, they're able to bring it out by their speech, by their example, you know, even things like by their kirtan and so on. They can draw out people's faith and inspire it in the direction toward the Absolute. So we may not be having such empowerment where we can draw their faith out and draw their faith out of the coverings of the illusory energy that's causing them to move in another direction. So we can only try to be well-wishers and so on until some other personality or until Maya does a disappearing act by which it's easy to see the faith. Does it make sense what I'm saying? You can't draw, you can't force anyone's faith anywhere. And those who try to, it is always a disappointing situation in the end. It can only be inspired. And sometimes we have to bow, we know how the spiritual power will inspire and direct it toward the absolute. So we play as distant well-wishers, or distant because of them, or distant because of us, maybe their bad association or something like that. Until Maya, again, does a disappearing act, or else you become like really spiritually potent, or some spiritually potent person comes in their life and just, you know, digs through all that Maya, you know, shakes it off and just draws their faith out and directs it towards the absolute truth, in which their movement starts to go in that direction again. Okay.
So this question of inspired faith, so then our duty is, as aspiring devotees, if we come in contact with someone who has some potential, then it's our duty to kind of establish the ideal of Krishna consciousness and let them see and see if they can get attracted to that. Like, is that should be our motivation when we speak to them, when we spend time with them, when we read with them?
See, I didn't understand. I'm sorry.
Like, because you were saying, this is a really nice point, you were saying how faith should be inspired and not controlled. So then when we spend time with people, like new people, you know? And so instead of like, you know, because we have that lordship tendency anyways within us, it's innate. So then to counter that, we should be thinking, okay, I should inspire this person's faith, not control it. And I'm saying, is the way to do that, is that by establishing the ideal of Krishna consciousness, like, you know, this is what the final goal is, and this is what we're going for,
and then let them get attracted. There is no formula to inspiring people's faith. That's the point that I'm making. All right, y'all, here's the How to Inspire People's Faith book. No, page 1 starts preaching to them Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 verse 5. That's a very important verse. And then after that, go to text 10. You know, it's not a formula. It takes spiritual potency. Krishna Shakti Vinanahe Tara Parvatam. Like I said, faith is the investment of Radha in the living entity by which Krishna can become known. And that investment is coming through her agents that are moving around this material world, the pure devotees. So it's an investment from the transcendental region. Faith is an investment from the transcendental region. And pure faith, that is. Everyone's got faith that's intrinsic to the soul, but pure faith directed towards Krishna is an investment or the influence of the spiritual region, which is coming through the agents called the pure devotees in this world. So there is no formula to how to do that. It takes great empowerment. It takes empowerment, connection with the super soul. Like this, how to inspire a person's faith is very difficult. Of course, that's on the one side. On the other side, we have to protect our faith too. We have to work on ourselves also, which is what a lot of us may tend to forget inadvertently, by which it makes it easy to point the finger. My faith is not being inspired. Therefore, I'm taking shelter like that. You know, that means a level of insincerity on our part also. We have to work on ourselves. That is the operative principle in spiritual life. There's nothing in the environment that is unfavorable, really, in one sense. In one sense. Really, we're our own enemies. So the operative principle in spiritual life is self-rectification. You know, first rectify yourself and then rectify others. So we shouldn't just think that, oh, my faith isn't inspired and therefore I'm in Maya, you know, like that. That kind of rhyme. We shouldn't think in that way also, per se, but we have to work on ourselves, work on our faith, protect our faith, you know, by hearing, by chanting, and by inquiry and how to move forward in Krishna consciousness. These things we also have to do. But simultaneously, it is also a reality that Krishna is manifesting himself as guru for various individuals who are drawing their faith towards him. You know, Krishna is ultimately, as the attractor, he's pulling living entities toward him. And he's doing so through his agents, the Bhagavatam. So people are reading things, they're getting inspiration. So Krishna as the Bhagavatam is pulling them toward him. You know, Krishna as the pure devotees who are speaking, who are setting nice examples and so on, is pulling the living entity toward him. And this way, Krishna is attracting the living entities toward him, the conditioned souls. So that is a reality that Krishna's let's say, working like this through his agents. But also on our side, we have to do something too. We can't just bow out and say, I'm not being inspired in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I'm, you know, taking shelter of Maya or something like that. So it's double. But it is a fact that faith cannot ultimately be controlled. It can only be inspired, it can be nourished. And so, and when a neophyte devotee, when we find that source of inspiration and nourishment, then that is when real sadhu sangha is achieved, in a sense. You know, therefore, the instruction of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is like-minded association that inspires your faith, that directs your consciousness towards Krishna in the way that you are attracted. And for it's different according to different living entities. They have their different tastes, their different attractions to Krishna. So real sadhu sangha is achieved when one sees this is where my faith is being nourished and inspired, and they take shelter there. Naturally, of course, they take shelter there. And they move further on that path. Like that. These are my little understandings. Om Tat Sat. Is there anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna. Oh, wait, you have something? How about those inspired by cheating gurus?
Yeah, the cheaters and the cheaters.
That's going on. See, sincerity is the name of the game, you know. Prabhupada says in the SSR that if someone gets a cheating guru, that means they wanted to be cheated. Prabhupada has made such a statement because ultimately the guru is an external manifestation of the supersoul. But the supersoul knows exactly what's going on in the heart. So if we're getting some type of cheating situation, then there must have been some type of cheating propensity. That's the simple logic of it. Although we may quote the complications of a particular situation, but what about this? And look, no, they're obviously sincere. Just see, they're really sincere. Just looking. But the reality is that there may have been some cheating propensity that is, or some crookedness that was there in the individual's heart from this life or a previous life. My general approach to it is that if there is sincerity, then it's another type of upheaval of the material world. I got some type of cheating, let's say guru, or some cheating situation, and it became exposed. If I'm sincere, does this mean my movement should stop towards Krishna, right? If one is sincere, so it is discovered that, oh, this is not a right personality, or he's a cheating personality. Ultimately, it is Krishna who is trying to attract us toward him. So if I am sincere about movement towards Krishna, then although that situation is difficult, that won't stop my movement. Rather, I'll say, okay, movement has to continue forward. And one will take shelter of Krishna, praying to him, and so on. And again, Krishna comes in a variety of ways, in the form of the books, in the form of other personalities that will help us to continue to make forward movement in Krishna consciousness. There, I know, I've heard of one devotee who had three gurus that fell down. So that's pretty intense. But this devotee is still a devotee and still, you know, moving forward in Krishna consciousness from what I hear and so on. So movement can't stop if we're really wanting the goal of life. It's just like if you really want a degree in school and it's found out that your teacher is not he wasn't actually properly qualified to teach a class. Then what do? If you really want the degree, what do? Okay, I give up. No, you find, okay, who is a real teacher? A fake. When you find something that is fake, that is only indication of a reality. Just like Jiva Goswami gives an example. If someone is seeing a mirage of water, the mirage of water is based on the actual reality of water. Otherwise, you couldn't see a mirage of water unless there was something like water that exists in truth. So as much as there is something fake, it must be based on something true. The illusory nature of a thing must be based on something substantial. So if I'm having a fake guru or something that's not bona fide, it doesn't mean that there's no real substance out there. It means that my connection to it is yet to happen. So one continues to pray and he desires strongly the real substance. It could be just another test of Krishna. How much do we really want? Everyone's getting their different types of tests. Someone gets a guru who yells at them all the time, and that's a test. they're a bona fide guru, but they're always yelling at me and chastising me, and you know, that's, you know, I don't like to be chastised. My mom didn't even chastise me like that, you know, like that. And so that's a test, and someone gets some you know, varieties of difficulties individual souls are going to have. So this may be one type of difficulty for one soul in their path, where there's a, now there's a fact, some people might feel brokenhearted and go away. But I think that if there's seriousness toward the actual goal of life, although it's a temporary setback, it will not destroy their movement towards the absolute. Okay, so my teacher wasn't bona fide, so I need a bona fide teacher. And in the meantime, you know, there's so much facilities available for further progress like this. Okay. Luke wants to say something.
Hare Krishna. I was wondering, Prabhu, I was just thinking of this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Api chad sudaracharo vajate mamananya bhak. One, even if he commits the most abominable activity, if he's properly situated in his determination, then he should be considered saintly. So, is it appropriate if we should see persons in leadership position or in position of guru, if they manifest some residual imperfection, to think of them as a cheater guru?
Well, yes and no. See, discrimination is for the Madhyama Adhikaris, you know. So they do have this quality of being able to discriminate. There is something like cheating gurus there. Otherwise, it wouldn't be discussed by all of our acharyas about. So there is something, there is such a concept as a cheating guru, someone who isn't bona fide and so on. So to be oblivious to that reality would be another form of, let's say, ignorance of the understanding of the truths of Krishna consciousness. Of course, at what point do we become fully aware of those truths? That is the real question. Because a neophyte may be having such a tendency and then committing offenses. Because it is a fact, the example given, even in that Apichesudarachara Prabhupada Kosa's verse also, about the moon that has apparent spots on it. And so one sees the spots, but does it block the illumination of the moon? Just because there are a few spots on the moon doesn't mean the illumination on the moon is decreased because of that. So similarly, this verse is quoted in by Rupa Goswami, also a Nectar of Devotion, to describe a Bhav Bhakta. That a Bhav Bhakta may exhibit some apparent faults and demerits in his nature, his body, and so on. But he is still, you know, an exalted personality by dint of having bhava and Krishna consciousness. And so one should not criticize or judge him, or else he'll be finished. So there is, of course, danger. If you do not know what is the position of a person and you discriminate wrongly, then your spiritual life can be destroyed. And I shared these verses many times before, I think, from the Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Bhagavat, when he's describing Bhrigu Muni. And Bhrigu Muni kicked the chest of Lord Narayana. So that doesn't look very devotional. And I'm sure if we saw someone kick the deity, for example, I don't think we'll think that they have bhava or anything like that, you know. But Bhrigu Muni kicked the chest of Lord Narayana to exalt him above everyone else. And that was his actual intention, was to glorify Krishna. Although the action seemed very bewildering. So Vrindavan Das Thakur tells his pastime, and then he makes a point that if you don't know what is the adhikar of an individual, and you shall judge him, then you'll be destroyed. He says, you'll get into this difficult situation called sankata, where you'll be thinking, is he a devotee? Is he not a devotee? Is he does he really have bhava? He was just faking all this time. You get into this type of mind game. And he says, if you choose correctly, then you'll be liberated. And if you choose wrongly, you'll be destroyed. Now, who in their right mind is going to want to take a risk? You know, just like Daito was telling a story the other day about Vrikasura. You know, he had the power to touch anyone's head and would burst into 1,000 pieces. And Krishna said, you know, Sheila's benedictions don't work. Just see for yourself. Just try it on your own head. Now, who in their right mind would take such a risk? You know, What if it does work, you know, then I'll be finished. But Dhanavir Maharaj is told like this. He said, but that was another Maya, you know. Then he thought to touch his own head and then, of course, explode into a thousand. So who would be so foolish to take a risk? So Vrindavan Das Thakur offers the same point, that you'll get into this sankat where you don't know what is their position. And you'll be trying, is he in this position? Is he not in this position? And if you choose wrongly, he says your spiritual life will be destroyed. So any intelligent person who can't tell what is the actual position of someone would obviously not take such risks. So what is the solution? Vrindavan Das Thakur's solution is that you should, he says you should be humble with all. Yeah, you should glorify and be humble with all. And considering yourself a fool, you should continue to practice Krishna consciousness until Krishna gives you transcendental intelligence to understand everything in its right perspective. So when we're dealing in a lower plane of consciousness and understanding, then yes, you're right. Discrimination is very dangerous for our spiritual life. At the same time, for devotees on a higher plane, that's called the Madhyama plane, discrimination is an essential element for their progress, especially for their preaching. They would have to preach, you know, about these types of details and so on for the enlightenment of the individuals that they're speaking to. And then for the Uttama, the highest plane, they might, you know, they're in a whole nother reality. They're dancing with Krishna in their hearts and so on. They don't have time for all discriminate. Who's a Vaishnava, who's not a Vaishnava? Everyone's a Vaishnava. They're enjoying ecstasy. So, yes and no. Obviously, because we're new, we have to be cautious. It is good to be cautious. At the same time, we shouldn't stay on a lower plane of understanding forever, because that can cause offenses also, where you don't know where to give respect and so on because of being lesser situated. So, yes and no, both, according to our plane of understanding. I guess for the vast majority of us, the answer is better not to discriminate as such and just focus on my self-rectification. That is most important. Like that. Om Tat Sat. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you.